You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 347, here to recap Notre Dame's loss to Stanford, 17-10 loss. And all things considered, I'm in pretty good spirits to think when you consider what I think about Notre Dame football right now.
That's good. Will they still go undefeated the rest of the year?
No, they will not. And we'll get to that later on, but I'm sticking to kind of what I'd said when we were doing the preview for this game and how I think that this game, winning or losing, will impact the rest of the season. Have to give a shout out to Hank Waddles from Go Mighty Card. He said he did pick Stanford to win, even though he didn't think it would happen without a defensive score, and he got the defensive touchdown, and he was really close on his prediction. He had predicted a Stanford victory 17-14, and it was 17-10 with the defensive score.
That's pretty impressive.
So, props to him.
It's like he had some insider information there. One tweet I did see this week kind of summed up the how a lot of people felt about the game, but it was from Gerb Irish. I think he's actually called into the podcast already.
Yeah, he has.
And he just tweeted out, his wife asked and said, "We haven't watched American Horror Story this week." And he said, "I did last night." And she said, "You did?" It's like, yeah, last night on NBC from 7:30 to 10:30. And that's basically what it was.
So even though Notre Dame football has not been good, we do want to look at a few things that are positive, some good things, and then maybe trying to gather some, I don't know, an explanation or some reasoning as to the lack of success that Notre Dame has been having. It's weird because the first four games, you know, Notre Dame was able to pretty much score at will. And I did go back and look at how many points our opponents had been giving up. And you look at Texas, Michigan State, they did give up a lot of points to some other teams as well. So I kind of am second-guessing myself with my thoughts on how good this Notre Dame offense is. But then on the flip side, our defense, which has been giving up, had been giving up 30-plus points per game, is now doing incredibly well.
They're down to the 20 points per game, which is in the last three games now.
Yeah.
Which at the beginning of the year we said if they can keep hold opponents to 20 points a game, then this defense is where we want them to be and they can win.
If the Notre Dame defense would average 20 points per game, I would be incredibly, incredibly satisfied with that.
One of the random stats Brian Kelly mentioned, he said it's got to be one of the weirdest stats. I don't know how unusual it is, but Notre Dame has outscored their opponents, and they're 2-5.
Which is another thing that's so frustrating, is because, again, this loss as well is a one-possession loss.
Yeah, I have a lot of opinions on that.
All right, some of the things that we want to discuss. We did have a question that someone submitted from the website. We've got a contact form over there, irishsportstalk.net. You can also just tweet at us if you have thoughts or questions you'd like discussed at Irish Sports Talk. And that question was about playing Zaire in the game. We'll get to that maybe towards the end of the podcast. I do want to talk about third downs for Notre Dame, their defense and their offense, and some players that I thought played well, some things that are very positive for this team, and then also looking at the offense, and then the momentum swing. So let's just start with the third down numbers. In the first half, Stanford was at 5.7 yards to go on third down. I'm sorry, Notre Dame. Notre Dame was at 5.7 yards to go on third down, which is, I would say, is okay. Not great, but okay. But compared to Stanford, they were at 9.5 yards to go on third down. Now, they did have, there was a holding penalty that really put them back on one of the third downs, so that is a little bit skewed. But then for the final, for the game, those numbers kind of flip-flop. Notre Dame went from 5.7 to go on third down to 7.5, and Stanford went from 9.5 to 6.5. That's not the second half. That's just the total of the game.
Okay.
So they really made an improvement. Notre Dame kind of went the other way on that one.
Because they went away from the run.
Well, I'll be honest. I didn't get to rewatch the entire game. I watched most of the first half. And Notre Dame did. They ran the ball very effectively. On their touchdown drive, Folston was in on that series. They ran it, got a few yards. Kizer ran it, had a huge gain. And then he had a checkdown pass to Folston. And then again, another couple of runs. And then the touchdown score when they were at the goal line was an inside zone that Kizer kept and scored the touchdown. And I noticed for most of this drive, there were only six guys in the box for Stanford. But on that touchdown, there was at least eight.
And they still scored.
In the box. They ran it. They just bit on that inside zone, faked. I think Folston was in at that point. And they just bit heavy on it. And Kizer was able to get to the outside and kind of bowled his way into the end zone.
I think they actually brought Adams in. When Kizer scored the touchdown, Adams was actually in.
Didn't I say that?
Oh, I thought you said Folston.
Maybe I did. Folston was in for a lot of that drive, but
until that last play, they switched, and I was hoping. I noticed that because I was hoping that, as Kyle would say, my man Folston, or that's actually Johnny, but I was hoping he'd get that touchdown. When Adams came in, I was like, oh, he's going to get the credit for the touchdown there at the end. But then Kizer ended up running it in, and I was at the game with my brother, and when they marched down the field like that, ran the ball, I told them, if they can do that right here, they're not going to lose this game, because that is their weakness, is running the ball. They're able to do that, which is going to open up their very potent passing attack. Right now, we'll just call it their passing game. But for some reason, they went away from it later in the game.
And that's why I wish I would have been able. I just ran out of time, so I wasn't able to rewatch it. On Notre Dame's, well, first off, on their opening drive, they didn't move the ball.
No,
but
they, which I was, when they came out on that opening drive, it looked very lackluster. They did not look motivated at all. The offense, the way they came out, and the guys, how they ran their routes, there was just no energy there. I don't know why. But I saw it as soon as I was just at a high school game a week ago, and that's the first thing you notice when you're at a high school game. It's just slow guys just kind of walking off and on the field. I mean, you know, it's just slower pace. And that's how that first drive looked. The guys getting on and off the field, just how they did things. It looked like they had no energy. And then, of course, didn't they go 3-and-out on that? And then the second drive, they actually were doing something, but I don't know if they didn't feel like they could get, I don't know what the problem was, but it did not look good on that first drive.
And then on the third drive, they continued. They did move the ball more through the air, had some conversions through the air. And Stanford did bring more guys in the box, whereas they pretty much just had six in the box that entire second drive. They did have more guys in the box consistently. Sometimes there was just six. But we did see Kizer did go under center when it was third and short. He tried a quarterback sneak, got it close, didn't quite convert. Then they went under center again, and then Folston ran it to convert that fourth down. And on this drive, there were two false starts, one by new starter Hunter Bivin and the other one by the right tackle. And, I mean, they were right there at the goal line again. So that definitely hindered, but it didn't keep Notre Dame from scoring a touchdown. Notre Dame did come away with 3 points then.
Yeah, and they actually had a throw to tight end on that game. Nick Wisher had a 16-yard gain. They were at, what was it, 2nd and 20, and then they had a 16-yard gain on that. Then, of course, they got another false start, and it seemed they kept shooting themselves in the foot on that play. It seemed like they were moving the ball, and then they'd do something to make a mistake, and they were in worse position than they had been you know, the play before.
Okay, and then that pretty much brings up the half. So Notre Dame gets an interception, and then there's 40 seconds left over. They have two timeouts remaining. And here's where, at this point in the game, Notre Dame, at least from my perspective watching it, has all the momentum. It feels like this game is in the box. Notre Dame is going to finish this game 20-6 or 20-7 maybe. Something like that. And Notre Dame just kneels it and lets the clock run out. And I know that we've argued about this before. I do find it hard to be really critical of Brian Kelly at this point because a lot can go wrong in one play. And at this point, it's not like you're trying to get momentum. You have the momentum. You're in control of this game. I know you have a different point of view, so tell me your point of view and probably what the majority of Notre Dame fans feel.
Well, I was irate, as well as many of the fans in the Notre Dame stadium. With 42 seconds left, you have a chance to build on this lead. You have been able to move the ball pretty good up to this point. At least try. You have two timeouts left. At least try to go down the field. You're okay. You're 10 points. It's 10-0. You will be okay. You can take a risk because you're still two scores ahead. But here is where what irritated me the most is Brian Kelly's talked about how they don't have this killer instinct. They can't finish games. Well, the coaches don't either. You kneel the ball with 42 seconds left. And when, okay, if you are a dominating team, if Notre Dame would be 6-0 up to this point, then okay, fine, you can do that because you proved that you can go on and win the game. They haven't done that. You do not have... They've given away every game. And so why are you not building on that lead? Notre Dame, they have a history of this. Other years, too, I've been critical of Kelly. Just they never put teams away. Last year, USC, they should have put them away, but they just don't have that killer instinct. And right here, it proved the coaches don't have it either. They don't even try it.
You know what? Honestly, you have convinced me. When he talks about killer instinct, it does start with the coaches, and I think I'm changing my mind.
And you had a ton of momentum. Cole Luke had a huge interception. Your players are excited. The guys on the sideline showed a lot of excitement in this game, especially on defense. I mean, they were doing all kinds of things on the sideline. Some people might say it was fake, whatever. They were pumped up, and even that you had guys coming out and greeting the defensive players as they were coming off because they just had a huge play. And Doug Randolph is one of the big – I mean, he's out there. He is definitely helping get this team motivated. And here you – it should have – the offense should have been excited as well. They should have gone out there. Here the momentum is going their way. And it would have been hard to stop them.
It is true. The interception, it can be... That also adds to the momentum swing, and it would feel like... It would give a lot of confidence to the team.
Yeah.
And it would have been great to go out, even if you just would have got into field goal range and kicked another field goal. But being able to score off that turnover would have definitely just helped add to that momentum and that confidence.
That's when I was like... I was so irritated because this coaching staff, they do not have, like I said, it'd be one thing if they were 6-0. They were 2-4 at that time. They're now 2-5. They have no excuse not to try to go for that. What do you have to lose?
When you were talking about the players on the sideline being pumped up and maybe it looked fake, there was a shot of the guys kind of jumping up and down and, I don't know, dancing or
swaying
back and forth. And there's a shot of Kaiser kind of walking behind them and kind of looking at them like, what's going on? It was really funny. I do hope they're able to keep that. I wouldn't call it swagger because I think you need to be able to.
The defense had. They do have a little more. They do have more of a reason. They can have a little bit of swagger. They haven't given up a lot of points. The defense has scored points. The opposing defense has scored points, but this offense has not. Or Notre Dame's defense has not given a lot of points in the last two games. Which, obviously, the Hurricane. But, now I lost my train of thought. But it was, anyways, it had something to do with the second half. Or not scoring on that drive.
Okay, so Notre Dame moving the ball definitely first half. They didn't have a lot of opportunities to score. They had four drives. They would have had a fifth one if they would have not just punted it or not just kneeled it there with 40 seconds to go. So they had a punt on the first series, a touchdown, then a field goal, then a punt, and then they kneeled it to end the half.
I know what I was going to say. I don't have it right in front of me, but Stanford has not in the last 2 weeks they have not scored in the first half. So going into halftime with Stanford having 0 points is nothing new for Stanford, and if the coaches did any kind of history, they should have known that. They should have known that this Stanford team is a second-half team. That's when they scored the points. It's not a lot of points, but that's when they... Oh, they haven't scored a first-half touchdown in four straight games. Knowing that, that's another reason. You should know that. Know that Stanford is a second-half team. So you got to do everything in the first half to make it harder for them to make a comeback in the second. So notch that up for another coaching error.
Okay, so then the next time Notre Dame gets the ball in the second half, it's an interception, first drive, and it's a pick six. So right at that point is when I got an uneasy feeling in my stomach, and I felt like this feels way too familiar. It feels kind of like Texas, where even though Notre Dame was behind in Texas and in Michigan State, I still had that feeling like Notre Dame's not going to be able to come away with the win here. And it was right at that pick six point. We weren't up by a few scores, and I just felt like this was not going to end up well for Notre Dame. On the second series, Kaiser threw a second interception. They did have 10 plays on that series, held the ball for over 4.5 minutes, but again threw an interception. And that's when we see Malik Zaire come in. So let me read the question that we had about Malik Zaire coming into the game. This was from Aaron. Pulling Kaiser was a Bush League coaching move. Then he puts him back in to save the game at the end. Unacceptable. Brian Kelly is on his way out. So let's talk about that. I don't think Brian Kelly is on his way out this year. However, I have lost confidence in this coaching staff. And I think I've been the biggest kind of supporter or apologist and kind of trying to reason this away for them. But yeah. Here's... This isn't my someone in the forum, Solomon. He thinks that maybe that benching Kaiser, bringing in Zaire, was kind of a punishment for Kaiser. Brian Kelly telling him, "Hey, if you're not going to run the offense the way I want to, if you're going to make bad decisions throwing the football, turning the ball over, we're going to bring someone else into the game." And he thinks that was kind of a disciplinary move, or hey, if you're not going to get this done, I'm going to bring in someone else who did. I completely disagree with what Jimmy Clausen tweeted out as far as pretty much saying.
Here's what he said.
Okay, read it.
If I was Kaiser, I'd want to go in the draft early. Why would I come back with the head coach that has no trust in you, throws two interceptions, and gets yanked? If you trust a QB, you don't pull him. That hurts his confidence worse. Every QB will struggle at one point in their career.
Listen, if you have serious confidence issues, you're not going to be able to be a quarterback. You're going to have some ups and downs, but you have to find the confidence within yourself. Don't rely on the coach to give you confidence.
You know what I think? I think Brian Kelly must have been listening to Desmond Howard in the pregame, because Desmond Howard said the reason Kaiser played so well last year is because he had he was looking over his shoulder because Zaire was right behind him ready to play. Zaire was out with an injury, wasn't going to come out in the field. So... maybe he was listening to that and was like, hey, it worked last year. Why don't we try it again for a drive? Once again, I don't know why Desmond Howard, he comes up with some ridiculous things. But anyways, that...
I would not have pulled Kaiser. If it'd be my decision, I would have kept him in there. He is an NFL caliber player. Whether he's a first rounder this year or next year, he is a first round caliber quarterback. I would not have pulled him because Zaire hasn't shown that he can even be close or bring a spark. He has played a couple times earlier this year, and really the only time he's really he played well in the Music City Bowl, but his role was so limited in what he was asked to do. And against Texas, he did look great against Texas, and it looked like he made reads. He was great on the on running the football as well. But that's really one game.
Here is one stat. I think Tim O'Malley had tweeted it out, but in Zaire's stats, you take away the Nevada game. He did play at the end of the Nevada game. But if you take away the Nevada game, he's played 24 snaps. He's gained 41 yards, and he scored minus 2 points. So what I said, what we discussed last week, the one reason that against North Carolina State, I was okay with maybe bringing him in the second half because you needed to run the ball. But like we talked about, the reason I don't think they did is because he's trying to do too much. I think that's why his stats are terrible, is because he's trying to do too much. He wants to make a big play to prove that he's the starter. And that's why I thought they didn't bring him in against North Carolina State, because he's not willing to just make the short play and move the ball down the field. He's trying to make a huge play. That's why he gets sacked behind the line. That's why he doesn't throw the ball away. That's why he tries to run. And just as a fan watching the game, we saw that. We saw what he's been doing. How can you expect him to come in and, as Brian Kelly said, he was trying to find lightning in a bottle and, you know, try to spark something because they hadn't scored an offensive touchdown in a game and a half? You've seen what Zaire's done. You've seen how he's playing. His attitude isn't there. It's not right. It's not. His head isn't where it should be to be the quarterback. And as soon as I saw him come in, that's what we talked about. We knew it wasn't going to work. He was going to make that big play, and he was going to try to make that big play. He was going to get sacked. Something was going to go wrong because he just... And that's what happened. It didn't work. So, okay, fine. You try it for one drive. Why do you put him in again? Like, I can see that maybe you take him out for one drive. You know, they said Kaiser's hand. They were looking at his hand. You know, some people thought it was an injury. Brian Kelly said afterwards it wasn't. They were just trying to spark the offense. Okay, so one drive is one thing. The second and third drive made absolutely no sense. And then the first play that Kaiser comes in, when he's got to come in and save the day, he throws it into the ground. It's because he hasn't been playing for the second half.
And he still moves the ball down the field. Okay, Brian Kelly has done this before, probably or most successfully in the 2012 season when Tommy Rees came in for a struggling Everett Golson. But that is completely different. Kaiser, he's been the starter now for a year and a half. You know he's a solid player. He does make mistakes. He's not perfect. But it's clear to all the fans, and because he's starting, I think it's clear to Brian Kelly, he gives you the best chance at winning football games. So why would you pull your best player from the team?
Yeah.
For a coin toss as far as whether Malik's going to be able to get something going.
I totally agree.
And I'd say it's less than a coin toss. It's more like rolling the dice and hoping for a
six. Here's where I think that, once again, the staff thinks that for some reason they've proven that they can win games. They have proved nothing. They've proved to us that they can't win games. They think they can try some stuff like that. It's just infuriating. The reason that the whole coaching staff, I think this team is good enough to win, and I think they can make changes and win games, but Brian Kelly and the staff have to be willing to do it, and they haven't done it up to this point.
I have a new thought that early on, we now know that Brian Kelly was primarily with the offense, and then Fire Van Gordon spent more time with the defense, and the defense gets better. However, right when that happens, the offense starts struggling drastically. I think the only thing I can conclude from that is that Brian Kelly isn't doing a good job of teaching his assistant coaches, because there's no question the defense is playing better. We're getting to the quarterback more. We're giving up fewer yards. I know the last 2 weeks are kind of different offenses, different situations, but we're getting turnovers. There's gang tackling. Guys are forcing fumbles. They're playing hard. There's not nearly as many missed tackles as there were the first 4 weeks. And so I think it lies somewhat in Brian Kelly being able to explain or being able to get out of his assistant coaches what he wants to do.
I think you're onto something, because it seems wherever he's at does get better. But, and that's what I keep saying as well, the assistant, if you start looking at other teams, Alabama, Ohio State, look at the coordinators they're hiring. They're not hiring some linebacker coach from the NFL. Ohio State hired defensive coordinator that was an NFL head coach last year. Alabama is hiring Lane Kiffin, former head coach. And these guys probably aren't going to stick around more than a year or two, which some of them have. Lane Kiffin's been there for a little while. And they have some other coaches on the team. They're making big-time hires. They're getting stuff done. And he's replacing them with something. He can keep doing that. It's not, you don't need a coordinator that's going to stay around for 10 years as long as you do. Because if you're good enough, you can find good replacements as well.
And I think the one issue with the way Brian Kelly runs Notre Dame is that, at least on defense, has been his coordinator's defense. It was Diaco's defense, and then it was Van Gorder's defense. And now it's maybe a little bit of a hybrid between Van Gorder and, in quote, Brian Kelly's defense. So I think for that to work, to have a coach, a coordinator come in for 1 year and you expect him to be gone after that 1 year, I think you need to know who you are as a defense, as an offense, because you can't just go make a huge change from one to the other every year.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I think they need to decide who they're going to be on both sides of the ball. I think they know who they want to be on offense, even though they haven't been executing it very well.
Yeah.
At least not the last few weeks. But on defense, they need to figure out what kind of team they want to be, and then bring in a coordinator that's willing to do that.
Yeah.
And work within that system.
Yeah. And back to the quarterbacks, you know, and Zaire. Well, here's a stat for you. Brian Kelly has never had a coached quarterback that's gone to the NFL. I think Pike did Tony Pike. None of his quarterbacks are in the NFL.
I don't know, but I know that you brought it up, maybe it's been Tony, has brought up that Brian Kelly's quarterbacks get worse the longer they're with him. And I think there's outside factors that weigh into that. I don't think they get worse. I do think
the team's record. You and I discussed it the other night. The team record gets worse. With the first-year starting quarterback, Brian Kelly's record is amazing. And then, you kind of convince me, it's not necessarily the quarterbacks get worse, but they do more and the whole team seems to suffer.
Well, in 2012, they had the best defense Notre Dame's had.
Yeah.
And in 20 last year, the offense was outstanding, but they had an incredible running game that really did help. And they had Will Fuller, who took the top off of almost every defense. And this year,
it is the offensive line. I agree.
I want to throw one more thing. We've been talking about expectation versus realistic expectations, and there should be a better way to phrase that. But I think with offensive lines at Notre Dame, I think we've got to expect to have a decent hit or miss, but decent offensive line every other year, and then a really solid, maybe sometimes great offensive line that other year. Well, because in 2014, the offensive line did struggle. I don't remember what yards we were rushing per game, but I remember that there were struggles in the pass blocking, and we weren't running it super effectively. But then in 2015, absolutely insane. And I think this year, there are new guys, even though they've been here for several years, they're still new at that position. I think next year, it should be a top-notch offensive line again, and then probably the year after that, a step back again.
Some of that could be recruiting, because it seems like we're losing a lot of guys at the same time. If you can recruit good enough so that you can stagger it, and you know you're just losing one guy.
Well, hopefully we're losing five every year.
Every year, yeah. But I think that's what happened. All of a sudden, you lose three guys last year. One of them, you know, could have come back for another year. Elmer could have come back, and then even the off years, they've lost a lot of guys. It'd be great if you get to the point where every year, you know, you're getting some top recruit and he has some new starts so that you lose one or two guys each year and you can.
Well, next year they could all come back, but then the year after that,
you see,
two or three of them could be gone.
Yeah.
Here's one. Let's talk a little bit about issues kind of along that line. Issues with the offense. Running chunk plays, this is going to surprise you. If I would just tell you that, hey, Notre Dame had four rushing chunk plays, and that's the way Notre Dame keeps stats, 10-plus yards on a running play.
Okay.
And they had four of them in this game against Stanford. Three of them were by Kizer.
Yeah.
And this isn't typical, at least not this year, for Kizer to have as many rushing yards as he did. He ended up with close to 100.
He did another game as well.
He had 83 yards. But last year he had a couple times. He rushed for more yards last year than he has this year as far as yards. The fourth chunk play was from Folston, which I honestly got to give props to you for sticking up for him. But Folston looked really solid in this game. And he led the running backs in rushing. He had 49 yards on 8 carries.
And he was the running back that we were expecting to see, that I was expecting to see out of fall camp from what we'd heard. So obviously he was dealing with some injuries the last two games, but makes you wonder if even before that he was dealing with something, because he did not look like the running back that he was hyped up to be.
He looked really
he actually did.
Yeah, he picked up the yards that he should be getting. Ran great up the middle.
Just
I thought
keep giving him the ball.
And even Folston, I thought he ran pretty well too. Adams.
He
had 8 carries for 25 yards. It's only a 3.1 average, but he ran hard. Ran up the middle a few times, and then Williams had 2 for 10 yards. Other issues with the offense. This is one that you had brought up, Randall.
Well, the thing that I noticed being at the game, seeing players come on and off the field, was the receiver rotation. I don't know what is going on with that. You almost never saw your top three receivers on the field at the same time. You did not see EQ, Hunter, and Sanders out there at the same time. And Sanders is a very dynamic player. He wasn't even targeted in this game. Fink was targeted twice, I think it was.
He ran once. Actually, that was a pass. They considered that a pass. But he was targeted one other time.
And EQ, he did miss some time. I guess he was going through the concussion protocol. And Hunter was out there some. But Stefferson was out there a lot. And Boykins was out there. And they even brought in Sand. But why are you... Chase Claypool was even in there, had an incomplete pass. But we've seen what Boykin... He's not a terrible receiver, but he's not making the catches either. And when you need a guy to make catches, put your reliable guys in there that have been doing it all year and have proven it. And the receiver rotation just seemed really odd. I don't know if I haven't watched it as closely, but I was actually at the game and could see it happen, and it just, I don't know, maybe some of these young receivers are starting, or first-year starting receivers, you know, they're saying that they're not running routes very well, and that's why Kizer does hang on to the ball a little bit longer, is because their routes aren't as crisp, or however you want to say it, or if it's just starting to catch up with them, getting this much playing time, they're starting to hit that wall where they're slowing down, they're just not as... Or maybe it's just they don't have the motivation anymore.
The biggest disappointment for me is from this receiver topic is that CJ Sanders isn't getting the ball.
No.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe he got nicked up a bit too that we didn't notice it. But instead of Fink, he should be the guy getting that jet sweep action and screen passes to him. We need to get him the ball because... Especially in a game like Stanford where there's not going to be a lot of possessions and you might need some big plays to score touchdowns, a guy like him on a screen pass, he can make that happen.
Yeah, I agree. We've seen him do it.
And Brian Kelly has talked about we need to get him the ball more a few weeks ago. And
yeah.
Last week, I don't even know what kind of targets he got last week. But almost regardless. But he hasn't.
In the hurricane, all those receivers had at least 30 targets, I think.
But he wasn't getting that many. I don't think he got that many against Syracuse either.
No, he's been quiet.
Yeah.
And it's not like he is having big returns in the return game, you know, that he's wore down, you know, needs a breather on the sideline. He's been fair catching punts. A lot of the kicks, you know, have been touchbacks. I mean, it's not like he's doing a lot on the return game. Like, he hasn't been able to. So it's not like you need to give him a breather because he's doing so much on the in the return game. But it just seemed very odd to me that you're not going with the guys that are reliable, especially, you know, with an inexperienced group. Why are you still trying to get Miles Boykins all these catches when he hasn't proven anything?
All right. Let's just hit maybe some of the offensive positions we haven't talked about and then move over to the defense. We talked a little bit about tight ends. Anything more on that?
Wisher made some catch. They made some big plays. They actually, it almost seemed like they did the most in this game.
Smythe had one key block on, it wasn't a touchdown run, but it was a run on that second series. It was a run up the middle that got him very close to the goal line, and he had a block that helped open that up.
And was it on the third down when he got a huge play, or was it a long second down where he gained? Actually, I think it was a long second down, like Wisher. Second and 20 when Wisher had was a 16-yard catch.
Yeah.
So it was good to see him get more involved, but I don't know. They just haven't been doing anything, which really, you know, you talk about assistant coaches. What have the tight ends been doing? You haven't had the talent. I think Eifert and Kyle Rudolph, you know, some of those tight ends we had were amazing tight ends, and that's why it looked great. But at some point, you have to start questioning what's happening with these tight ends and the coaching they're getting.
But I think it's talent. I think
it could be. I'm not saying, but you got to look at something, because for how many years in a row now, who knows what we would have had in Alizé Jones?
Well,
nobody knows.
We don't know yet. We will know. But that's the thing. But at wide receiver, you have speed. You need a coach, running routes, blocking, things like that. For a tight end, it's a gift from God if you have speed. And I don't think these guys have that gift. I think they're solid. You can make it work, but they're not going to produce, you know, four catches a week for 50 yards.
Yeah.
O-line. Really, and again, I didn't rewatch the second half, but I thought they played pretty well. They did have a couple penalties.
Bivin made his first start over McGovern.
Even on that third drive where they did get a field goal, they had a couple false starts there. But overall, I thought they played pretty solid. I thought when Kizer did get pressured and sacked too often, I thought it was his fault.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like they're not quite as good in pass protection as they were a couple weeks ago. It was like a couple weeks ago, it looked like they could do whatever they wanted in the passing game because Kizer just had all the time in the world. And I think they're not as good in the pass, but I think the run blocking did improve some. I mean, something had to happen for those guys to get as many rushing yards as they did. And I think they did better in the running game, but they still haven't put together a great. Yeah. It's just frustrating. I mean,
consistency.
Yeah, there's no consistency.
All right, over on to the defensive side of the ball then. Let's start with the defensive line. They did switch it up. They played a lot three down, kind of like Brian Kelly said they would. Dalen Hayes was in there quite a bit, and I thought that they played really solid. I thought they were flying off the ball and pretty often dictating or driving the offensive linemen back or keeping control of them for the most part. I was very happy with the way the defensive line played.
Yeah, I have to add more to the offensive line than just remember a conversation I had with Tony today. But for the defensive line, Jerron Jones finally played like we always wanted him to play. Like, if he would play like that 90% of the time, it'd be insane. Like,
he'd be an unstoppable force.
He was. How can he sack force the fumble, get up, jump over the guy, and still recover the fumble. Like, that was an insane play. I mean, if he give half that effort every time, what are you going to do? I mean, he played a very good game this game.
He did.
And the one time that he just pushed the offensive lineman back into the quarterback, mm-hmm. there was nothing they could do to stop him. I mean, nothing. So I don't know what they did, if the defense player beside him shocked him with a cattle prod right before the play, but something happened, and they need to keep doing it.
Linebackers, James Onuwalu forced a fumble. Thought he looked really solid. Had a couple, he had three pass breakups. He was on coverage a couple times, and continues to look really solid. And who knows? He might end up maybe in an NFL camp. Maybe.
I was a little worried when he went down. Looked like he got injured in one play, but he did recover. It didn't look good on the field, but he seemed to do okay.
And then let's go cornerback. Or we have more with the...
Greer Martini made a huge play as well. I forget which drive it was, but he took on the blocker, and it looked like the running back was going to get around the end, but somehow he got away and wrapped him up with one arm and brought him down. It was an incredible play by him.
He had two sacks.
Okay, and just that play right there, just being able to take on the blocker and get away to still make the tackle was huge. He's definitely stepping up his game and looked really good.
All right, cornerbacks. Finally, I thought Cole Luke had a phenomenal game. Obviously, he had the interception, and then he ripped the ball away. The one time it was called down. The forward progress was stopped before he was able to rip the ball out. That was the right call.
Could you hear the whistles?
No.
Nobody in the stands thought, all of us watching thought that ball was still alive.
But he was being pushed back, and they always do blow it dead as soon as they start getting pushed back. But what I liked was the effort. And it reminded me of Tommy Zbikowski.
Yeah, and that he was doing that because he gave up a play like that against Michigan State when the receiver just wanted it more than him and literally took it away from him. And he seemed to fight for it a lot more. It's like he doesn't want that to happen again. And even if it didn't count, it puts a little doubt in the offensive player's head knowing that, you know, he could rip this away and I got to be careful with
Definitely. It. Anything else from any of the cornerbacks?
They did pretty good. I mean, Cole Luke definitely, it seems like he's better playing in the nickel position. And a couple of the plays, you know, we were kind of discussing before, you know, maybe he could have done a few things different, but he did play a pretty good game.
And then at the safety is Drew Tranquil, who led the team with tackles, had 8 solo tackles, 1 tackle for loss. And I thought he did a great job at helping in the run game, too. One play in particular, he was deep at safety and saw it was a run play, ran up, made the tackle for a very short gain. So I think he's played much better than kind of the earlier part of the season.
Yeah, and we were kind of debating. We rewatched the play before we recorded tonight, but that touchdown drive where Stanford fumbled the ball in the end zone there, he was taken out right before that. And it did look like he got a little shaken up on the play, and I'm hoping that's what it was because they should not, in a goal line play like that, as close as Stanford was to the goal line, they swapped him out for Jalen Elliott. And I'm just hoping that it was because they thought he was shaken up.
Well,
he's that guy that you should have in there on that play.
And I haven't lost that much confidence in the coaching staff. The play right before that, he was knocked down, and he did kind of get up weird and kind of grab his thigh or his knee a little bit. And so I think that's what he just came off, just make sure he wasn't hurt, and then that next play, unfortunately.
That happened right in front of where I was sitting. And so he was actually running back and forth, so he looked fine. That's why I didn't think it was because of an injury, and that's why I want. But
I know, but even when you're playing basketball, you get hit, and it kind of stings for a little bit, and then like 10 seconds later, you can feel that, oh, I'm fine to go. But in 10 seconds before that, the coaches need to decide who's going to be on the field.
Yeah. Oh, you could be right, but watching the game when it happened, it did not make sense. But he was shaken up on the play before, and so let's hope it was because of that. But the one thing I noticed with the defensive backs the entire game is that there seemed to be a lot of confusion getting on and off the field. Half the time, Tad Light was halfway out onto the field telling guys to get off and then go back on. That was the most confusing part on the defense. Well, I don't know what was going on, but it happened.
Was it more they were sending guys onto the field late, like they didn't have enough guys on the field, or was it switching players?
Both. I mean, it was just everything. There was just confusion there. A guy would come off, he was almost a silent, then all of a sudden he'd go running back out, try to get there, and they'd tell somebody else. That was the most confusing part of the defense. Watching them as far as with the players in the sideline, that was the most confusing part. And I don't know if it's the young players, I don't know what's going on, but it didn't look good. And then, you know, they didn't have time to get set up, and those safeties need to know what's happening. And so it was like they didn't know if they should be out there or not, and it seemed like Tad Light was having a hard time communicating to them because he was always out in the field, you know, 5-10 yards trying to communicate with them.
So and this is not a great offense that Stanford has. So definitely still some issues of concern when we face a Miami who does have a decent offense.
Yeah. But back to the offensive line.
Yeah.
I was talking with Tony today, and this offensive line, the one bad thing was the snaps. We didn't talk about the snaps. Sam Mustipher had issues again. And I didn't watch, I don't know how it looked online, but we were both convinced that Kaiser would have got that bad snap. The safety, Kaiser would have got that. You can debate that, whatever.
I think
he
would have. I agree with you.
I do think Kaiser would have. But the other thing, it is hard for this offensive line to block for Zaire. They don't know where he's at back there. He's moving all over, trying to make that big play. Kaiser at least stays in the pocket, you know, kind of stays where he's supposed to. They don't know. I guarantee you they get frustrated trying to block for Zaire. And that was just another sign that made no sense to have Zaire in there. If you're trying to make a comeback, it makes no sense.
All right. Do we have our score prediction winner?
It was
Musical Day.
Henry Waddles from Go Mighty Card.
Well, he didn't.
I know.
He didn't tweet it out.
I didn't actually check. One other thing, I have to mention this. You saw it on TV, but I didn't even tell you this beforehand. Did you know that they did not let Yoon and Van Gorder and Daly do their little, you know how they always do their little celebration at the end of the kick?
Yeah.
They did not let them do that.
What?
I don't know if the coaches fussed about it. David Shaw was probably over there whining about it. But they did it once. They stopped them and the ref talked to them and they didn't do it again.
What? Why?
I have no, it's
culturally
excessive celebration.
Oh, I figured
it's something like that. Or taunting or something. That's so ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But I guarantee you David Shaw was fussing about it because he also fussed about the whistles.
I thought maybe it was something because of that's kind of an Asian thing, doing like the bowing thing. I think they do it in Thailand. I'm not sure where else.
I don't know. They did talk about it in the post-game show, Reggie Brooks, and that's absolutely ridiculous. They're not doing anything to any other players. They're not. It's not excessive celebration. They're not taunting. It is absolutely pathetic. Anyways, the other thing was the whistles. David, the refs made an announcement and said that there's a whistle in the stands. They need to stop it. They need to turn it in, or they're going to take care of it, and blah, blah, blah. And there's complaints about it. And the refs were talking to David Shaw just before that. He fussed about it against, in other game, other times they played Notre Dame. Was it 2012?
I think goal line stand. I think it was 2012.
He's done it before. But Notre Dame fans responded perfectly. As soon as they announced that, thousands of people started whistling, and it sounded like there were 10,000 whistles in the stands. There was no way you were going to hear where it was coming from. And then they did call a timeout. Stanford did. But that whiny little coach.
I mean, I hate, you know, teams like, you know, Michigan, Ohio State. But I have disrespect for David Shaw.
I do too.
I just don't like the guy.
It's his demeanor. It's just how he comes across.
He's very condescending.
Yeah. He always fusses about something like that. He is a whiner.
Anyway. I think we pretty much covered everything that we wanted to discuss.
I know some of the people fussed about the broadcast, you know, Doug Flutie.
Yeah. Where I was watching, I couldn't hear it too well, and I just listened to the first half, didn't listen to the second half, or watch the second half. So I didn't catch all of what he was saying, but I believe he made a comment about whenever Zaire comes into the game, he just makes something happen, or he said something to that effect as before the dismemberment of the Irish offense when Zaire was in the game.
The one tweet was from Lewis Nix. Leave it up to him to have some smart comment. But he was like, is Flutie rooting for Stanford? I'm asking for a friend. But it seems like that every week, especially the away games. But it's part of, I guess it doesn't bother me. I did get irritated for the, shoot, which game was it now? They were begging for the targeting call.
Was it Syracuse?
Yes, game?
Yes.
That was bad. But as a Notre Dame fan, I've gotten used to the hate. Either it's basically love or hate Notre Dame, and a lot of these announcers just, I don't know. I think they can't say it, but it makes them very happy when Notre Dame is struggling.
Let's end on a positive note. Let's start this ending with a negative note. Okay. I do think Notre Dame's going to lose a lot more games. I don't think they get to a bowl game this season. I might be wrong. I've been wrong this whole season. So I may be wrong. But the positive is that both sides of the ball, the offense has been great at times. The defense has been great at times. And that just tells me that there is inconsistency. But it's not because there's not enough talent. It's just that there's mistakes made from on the coaching side and also at times from players in the game as well. These guys are young. The offensive line will probably come back intact next year. The receiving core will be back intact. And most of the defense, we lose a couple of key guys, but a lot of the guys who are playing a lot now are very young. And so I think that the future, as always, is bright for Notre Dame.
There's always next year. Well, here's where I'm at. I still think I'm even more frustrated with the coaching, with Brian Kelly and the staff after this game than I was before, because yet again they failed to make adjustments. I do think Notre Dame could have won this game if the coaches wouldn't have made some mistakes. I think Brian Kelly is starting to, I don't know what he's trying to do, but it's not working. I think he's
let's put blame where it belongs. So second half, the two interceptions by Kaiser, that was his fault, player fault. But where I do blame Kelly is the next three series, putting Zaire in the game.
The thing I blame them for is just the before the half, not attempting to go for a score at the end of the half.
Mm-hmm.
Putting Zaire into the game for the end for that long. And then not staying with the run game, not staying with what was working. It seems the play calling is just terrible. And then the clock management at the end of the game was just awful. And some of it had to do with Kaiser on that. But supposedly they practice that every week.
And even more this past week.
Yeah.
As far as an end of game situation. And you're talking about spiking the ball with about, what was it, 14 seconds left? Or
it was sack, I believe.
Yeah. But instead of spiking it, they should have just they should have had a play ready that there's enough time on the clock, but we don't have timeouts, but we're running out of downs. It's not like this is a run for a first down. We only have you just have one play left over if you do spike it. And you would think that if I'd be a coach, I would have something in the system where if it's that situation, we run two corner routes and maybe a dig route inside the end zone, something where, and then Kaiser can just throw away because there's enough time left over that it doesn't, it's either a touchdown or it's an interception
or it's an
incompletion.
Well, and that's what's frustrating because just last week Brian Kelly talked about how they can't win these close games, and he said it's because of the young players and whatever, but it didn't seem like they had a plan in place to win this game. When it came down to when it was a close game, they didn't have a plan in place to win the game. And that's on him. I mean, Kaiser's an experienced quarterback. He's had a lot of starts. They've done better. They've been able to do it before. I mean, last year, they looked great running the two-minute offense. But it's just, I don't know. It was terrible.
I'd like your input on this, listeners. Talking about the coaching, and do you think one of the signs I would look for in a coach, a solid coach, is if he learns from mistakes and gets things going in the right direction. Not all at one time, most likely, but here and there, if there's things that are fixed moving in the right direction. I did post over on the forums at irishsportstalk.net, but you can just either send an email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, with your answer, or just fill out the contact form over on our website. But I have a couple different topics where I'm just curious on your thoughts if Brian Kelly has solved this issue, or if it's a recurring issue, or if it's headed in the right direction or the wrong direction. And this isn't just X's and O's at all. But one of the topics was players disqualified for academics. A few years ago, there was the Frozen Five. This year, we had Alize Jones. And I don't even remember 3 or 4 years ago if we had serious issues with academics or not. Next issue, inconsistent O-line play. Do you think that it's gotten better, or do you think it's the same thing we've always been struggling with, kind of up and down, but not consistently getting better? Number three, red zone scoring. Number four, on defense, getting pressure on the quarterback. Number five, tight end play. And then lastly, running game success. This is not at all, there's a lot more that could be added to this list. This is just some things I thought of at the top of my head. So if you want to, send us an email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or fill out the contact form. It's really simple, just over on our homepage, irishsportstalk.net. And just and maybe you want to add to the list and ask for our input. But that's something I'd like to discuss. We have a bye week coming up. So this is something I'd like to discuss later on in this week. Do you have anything off the top of your head, Randall, that you think should be added to that list?
No, I'd say that's a good start.
And I think our team's not going to be perfect, but I just want to see the team improve. And sometimes it might even take a few years. When Brian Kelly first got here, the offense was not great. We had a good running game, but we didn't score a lot of points. And so some of these things aren't fixed overnight, but are there improvements over time that are noticeable, or is there a step back? So I'd love to have some of your feedback on that. And you can also tweet it at us as well. All right, that's all I've got, guys. Thank you for listening. One last thing, quick go check out Pro Football Focus. If you want help with your fantasy football, if you want help with daily fantasy football, they've got you covered over there. They've also got great articles as well, and they cover the NFL and college football as well. So with that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.